Before we hop into this week's episode, I wanted to give a trigger warning and remind you to just check the show notes because we may be discussing sensitive topics. If this episode's too heavy for you, we'll catch you next time. But if it's okay and you want to tune in, I look forward to sharing the space with you.
Trying to make it right. These people won't let me go. I'm just trying to live my life. I just need space to grow. I'm just trying to make it right. These people won't let me go. Let me grow, let me go. Let me grow, let me go. They should know, they should know. They should know, they should know. I'm just trying to live my life. I just need space to grow. I'm just trying to make it right.
Welcome to the Tea with Bree. I'm your host, Bree. Thanks for listening. The Tea with Bree podcast is focused on deep, honest, and vulnerable conversation. Each week, I sit down with a different guest in order to have those conversations. Every week, we'll start my guest bio, an intro into how we know each other, and then we'll go into a deep dive conversation about whatever topic they brought to me that week. This week, I am joined by my guest, Jessica Birch. Jessica is a born and raised Austinite. Her roots started in the world of education, where she taught as an elementary school teacher for 6 years, and then decided to make a bold decision and dive headfirst into the world of marketing and graphic design. She's also about to become a published author with her first children's book on the horizon, and in the early stages of campaigning for her own podcast, Binge Bucket, which is scheduled to launch on June 1st. Hello!
Hello! Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I'm very excited to chat.
I'm so excited. I've been waiting for
when you came. When you came in as like, when you like applied air quotes to be on the show, I was like, yes, come on, let's talk. One, because I always want to talk to people, number one. But two, I always appreciate when another podcaster comes on. I'm like, you understand me.
Oh,
you are
yeah.
my people.
Yes.
You get the obsession.
100%. I did a recording this morning and I get it. I mean, I'm learning. I'm still in the early stages, but I get it.
Yeah, wait, so let's start there. What is your podcast going to be about? What made you start it? Like, tell us all the things.
Sure. Okay, so my podcast is called The Binge Bucket Podcast, and it's scheduled to launch June 1st, 2024 of this year. And I wanted to provide a platform for local entrepreneurs, and it really doesn't have to be local, just entrepreneurs. I just love Austin because I'm born and raised. So I wanted to provide a space for them to come and share their story, talk about their business, talk about their service, and just kind of build a community where other entrepreneurs can learn from mistakes they've made, from lessons that they are willing to share, and then also too, to help raise brand awareness for small businesses in the area.
I love that. I love that. I have to remind me to connect you with someone, Anna. Okay. She's starting a new business and she's actually an upcoming guest as well. But I think Ooh. You two would have like a great conversation. And I'm not going to tell you about her things, but.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm all about networking. I actually, how I found your podcast is you. So one of my friends, old high school friend, Shelby Sorrell. That I've followed her journey of up and coming and what she does. And then she had posted pictures of you. And then I, of course, you know, you creep. And so I,
as one does.
Yeah. And so I was creeping and I was like, oh, she's got a podcast. And so I was listening to a few of your episodes and I was like, oh, I like her.
Thank you.
And yeah, so I was like, I'm going to apply to go on.
I'm happy you did. Yeah. This sweet little show that I started on a whim in October of 2019, right before the pandemic started. I had left a previous show I was on and we had a falling out. And so I was like, I'm going to start my own thing. And my boyfriend at the time was like, you've always wanted your own show. Just go do it. And it just, when I tell you everything just fell into place, it was like,
you're like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I found a podcast studio for free to record in.
Wow.
I know. My friend designed my first logo and my second logo. And then my other friend is the intro music. Like, she was singing a song. Mm-hmm. And I was like, would you edit this to be my podcast theme song? So here we are. And it's been a delight. I do miss a podcast studio when I have to listen to the sirens go by. And I'm like,
yeah. And you're like, and okay, I know right now I don't know if you can hear her, but my tiny dog is scratching at my feet because she wants me to pick her up, and I'm like, you're not gonna be in the shot right now.
I know, I get so mad. I'm like, Brie, it is your show, you're allowed to be human. I'm like, there's also a show that I listen to of like full like professionals who recorded their house, obviously, and they hear like cars go by. I'm like, it's fine, I'm just a perfectionist, it's gonna be okay.
For sure. Yeah. So that's kind of where that's that. So I wanted to start it. I guess we'll go back a little bit. I was an elementary school teacher way back in the day.
Bless. And
I know. Shout out to all the teachers in the world right now.
I work at a nonprofit preschool right now. And I'm like, I love our teachers because it is not an easy gig.
It is. It's definitely something I thought I was going to do for the rest of my life. And then COVID hit. And I think I was already kind of itching to get out because I wanted to be in a more... And this is going to sound really bad, and it's nothing against teaching, but because you can be extremely creative with teaching. But I wanted a different avenue for creativity. I like writing. I like creating. I like just that graphic design world. So COVID hit. And throughout the first year of COVID, I started teaching myself graphic design and really researching. I took some certification courses for marketing and got to a point where I was like, every teacher has a side hustle. I don't care what they say. I mean, you might not, and that's fantastic, but most teachers I know have a side hustle. And mine was freelance writing. I would ghostwrite. I would, you know, create blog posts or anything for anybody that would pay me. And I got a big enough kind of clientele where I was like, hey, I could start really doing this. So I was able to leave teaching, started doing that. And then through that, I went into the corporate world and I got hired full time for a marketing specialist for a corporation in Austin. And then loved it, absolutely loved it. And then they got acquired. So of course, with being acquired, what happens? Layoffs. So I was laid off and went back to contract work, found another job in the corporate world. Again, loved it. I got to travel. I got to learn so much from marketing, from graphic design, from just behind the scenes creating. And then again, layoff. And I'm like, and so this happened recently. And I'm like, oh my gosh, all right, back to contract work. And then, of course, also applying and seeing what else is out there. But then in the process, I'm like, why don't I take all these skills and tools I've learned, because I know how to do this and I do it for companies. Let me try and do it for myself and see what I can build. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to leave a 9-to-5 and become an entrepreneur and then work 24/7. So that's kind of how I got pushed into doing this, because I've wanted to do a podcast and I've wanted to do something like this for a long time. And while I was working, I was building a branding guide and all of that stuff. And I started campaigning for it. And then I got laid off and I was like, wow, I guess we're going to do this. Here we go. Double down. Yeah. I was like, okay. I guess that's kind of how I got pushed into this.
Yeah. You talking about hustler, like entrepreneur life. I did consulting for 3 years, almost 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I loved making my own schedule. I loved getting to pick like who I worked with. Like, I did nonprofit like fundraising and marketing, contracting and event planning. And it was chef's kiss. Loved it so much. But then I turned 32 and I was like, I need health insurance. And I don't want to pay out of the wazoo for it. Yeah. So.
100%. Yes. And you can definitely contracting. Make some pretty good, you know, money, but it is a constant hustle. You're always trying to find your next client.
I know my friend, we did an event 2 weeks ago for my job that I'm at right now, and all my friends like, this was beautiful, like you could be an event planner. I go, in a previous life I feel like I was, and I think I would like to do it, One, the stress, I would have so many gray hair, number one. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm trying to get out of, I've been working through my perfectionism lately in therapy, and I'm like, I don't know what's triggering it, but it's a thing. And two, I'm like, I would do it as a contractor. I'm like, but that hustle would be so hard. And like right now, like with the economy, like people aren't really paying for things unless it's like wedding planning. Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to stay here for a second and give it some space.
And you're like, I got to have a mindset for weddings.
Yeah. I mean, I always joke like if I ever get married, I'm eloping because I just my family alone is too big that I'm like, I'd rather go on a trip than like pay for a wedding.
Always drama with a wedding.
Always. And so I also planned my 10-year high school reunion like 6 years ago now. I planned it living in Texas. I'm from Connecticut. I planned it. Okay. Didn't even go. I planned it and it didn't even show up. But like everyone's like, this is like the perfect event and you're not here. Like linens, photo booth, DJ, open bar, gosh. Like the whole thing, like sold tickets. And everyone's like, this was great. Where are you? I'm like, oh, I'm home. Like I'm not. You're like, I wasn't coming.
I was just going to help y'all out.
Yeah, I was like, I wasn't going to be there. I just happened to have been secretary for our class, and the president was getting married, and she's like, would you mind planning? I was like, no, girl. So that's my whole shtick of like, I could do it. I'm just like, I just don't know. So I give you and anyone else who's an entrepreneur so much credit because it is a constant hustle. Like, they think people only see like the, you can work from anywhere, you make your own schedule, and you get to do, I'm like, that all sounds nice until you're like, rent's due, this bill's due, and this contract's about to drop me, and this one just like let me go, and I'm not sure, like, it's just like a lot of piecing together, and it just gets so, but I'm sending you all the good vibes. Everything's going to be, you're going to flourish.
I'm going to accept every single good vibe. Because there are moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, what's next? But I always figure it out. And that's just kind of like my motto. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to figure it out. And we're going to see how it goes. And I think you said therapy. And I'm going to touch base on that. Yeah, shout out to therapy. Because I definitely, the name of the podcast kind of formulated in therapy. And I was, my best friend will tell you, I fought tooth and nail. I didn't want to go. I was like, no, I'm fine. I'm good. I don't need to go. I'm okay. And she was a huge, a huge advocate for therapy will help. I promise. Just go once a week or, you know, once every 2 weeks, just do it. So finally it got to a point where I was like, yeah, I think I need to talk to somebody. I think it was telehelp, met my therapist who I adore. He's fantastic. But yeah, we were chatting because one of the things I was going to therapy for is an eating disorder. And I think it's something that I probably have dealt with since maybe end of middle school. I know I can recall like moments in high school, but it didn't become its like own dark entity until college and then really manifested after having children. And I don't think the children were any part of like why it got worse, but I think it just became so out of control, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was talking to him and we were working through some things, and binging is the eating disorder that I deal with. And I didn't really even know it was an eating disorder until I would tell him something and he'd be like, let's touch. Wait, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, you know, because we were talking about like, okay, in a stressful situation, what did you do right after that? And then I would just casually say like, oh, you know, I went home and then I just ate a lot and ate a lot, like just, but would describe it. And he could start seeing a pattern of like, so it sounds like you're using food as like a, you know, a coping mechanism. And I was like, no, it's fine. It's good. And then he had me fill out, you know, he asked me questions like, well, do you feel like this? Do you feel like that? And I was like, yeah. And then I started looking at it more and I was like, oh, I definitely think that there's something here. And so working through stuff like that, or working through understanding the eating disorder, coming up with strategies, because it did become such a big thing when I started feeling shame from it, you know, and then there was like the aspect of hiding food away, you know, like going so where people can't see you eat because it's an out of control feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just be going to like, it's like a state of frenzy for me, it's 100% an emotional response to stress or other people's emotions. And so I would go and hide in my pantry and just like eat as much as I could to the point where I felt physically sick. And then would feel so disgusted and embarrassed and shame, and all of the feelings would come afterwards. And then you're like, oh, I just want to get it out of my body, you know? But then it just becomes a cycle again and again and again. So we were talking, and one of the things that I came up with was, you know, and this is like a horrible thing to say, I don't know if it is, but instead of going cold turkey, because I feel like that never works, it's like weaning you off of the bad habit or weaning you off. I would keep a little bucket. It's like a clear bucket in my fridge where I would just have a ton of healthy snacks. So if I got that urge to binge and it became too much, I could just go to my bucket, my binge bucket, and everything was up for grabs. I could eat it didn't affect my health like when I would go into the pantry and just eat, you know, I don't even, like, two tubs of icing. I mean, it was horrible, but it was that immediate endorphin release, you know? And of course, sugar is an endorphin release. You just want to feel good. You don't want to feel sad. You don't want to feel mad. You don't want to feel all the stressors. So, yeah. And so he was like, hey, that'd be a really good deal for like a podcast. And I was like, you know what? I think you're right. And so that's kind of how it evolved, because I feel like entrepreneurs put themselves out there. They're taking a risk. They don't know if it's going to succeed, fail. It's extremely vulnerable with what they're trying to do. So I thought, what a great way. I'm going to take something that I have a hard time talking about. I'm going to force myself to put myself out there about this topic because it is vulnerable. And I'm going to spin it so it doesn't have a negative connotation behind it anymore. I'm going to turn it into something positive. So that's how the name of the podcast came to be.
Therapy. I just like, if everyone could be in therapy, the world would be such a better place.
Seriously. I feel like everybody needs a therapist.
And even if you don't think you do, I feel like you do. Like, oh, you're yeah. like, oh, I'm fine. I don't have anything. I'm like, the weeks when I'm like, I have nothing. And then I end up crying for the whole session. Like, yeah. Oh, just kidding.
Or it the moments that me, you're so. Driving in a car and you're like, everything's fine. And a song comes on and you're like, why am I bawling all of a sudden? Clearly there's some stuff that I'm keeping inside.
Right. And like you sharing your therapy, I think about, I've been with my therapist on and off for 3 years.
Yeah.
And she and I got connected because I was talking to my friend who is also a therapist about how I wanted a therapist specifically who focused on eating disorders. Mm-hmm. Because mine is for sure triggered by like control and stress and like feeling like things are out of my, 100%. I just can't, I get overwhelmed. We had a session. And I'm on my second round of doing 75 soft. I'm like not trying to be wild.
I did 75 hard for one day and I quit. It's like,
I'm like hard. That's two workouts a day. It's just it's too restrictive.
Yes.
And I've watched some friends who do the hard. I'm like, God bless. Couldn't be me because I'm still trying to live life. And I think that's the interesting thing about an eating disorder, specifically mine, and like you saying, yours started in middle school. I remember mine starting around like 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah.
And whenever someone asks me, I'm like, the interesting thing is like, no one in my life has ever made a negative comment about my body. It has just always been like, I think it started from like a media feeding into my brain. Like we talk about like the powers 100%. Of social media, but I think about like us growing up in like the early 2000s and like, now I'm like on TikTok, like the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Of people who are using the Taylor Swift sound of like, you never survive in the asylum that they raised me. And it's like people who are in ED recovery. And it's like them sharing of like all of the diet foods we were like pushed onto us, like SlimFast and like Jenny Craig. And then also like all the magazine covers of like people who were like rail thin and they were like struggling to keep thin. And you know, you look at like the Biggest Loser, like all these things that told us from so young that we like needed to
subliminally.
Be
subliminally
I would feel like it was even overtly like you need to be thin, like thinness will equate to beauty. And this is also still when like there wasn't a lot of diversity on TV, and that's like body shape and race wise like I think for me growing up, the only like black women I remember seeing on TV often were like Raven Simone, Gabrielle Union, and Brandy. Other than that, I was like, kind of, you know, Family Matters and like all the shows like before everything came out with the Cosby, all that stuff. Like I think about that, but like in my generation's TV, like that's what I think about. And like there was even an episode of That's So Raven that like lives in my head rent free of like where she was like told she couldn't be a model because she was a certain size or whatever. Yeah, so
I remember that episode.
Yeah. So I think about that too right now as I am dealing with my stuff of like I've been having some health stuff go on. Like both of my parents had cancer. My grandfather had cancer. So like now I'm in the process of just like starting to get some testing done. There's you know, there's nothing major, but being proactive. And so my gynecologist and I were talking and she's like, when was your last period? I was like, oh, I don't know. And she's like, well, I was like, oh, I don't get a regular period. And I haven't since I was probably like 16. Like,
okay,
it used to be like every 3 months for 3 weeks. But now they just kind of pop up whenever they feel like it. But I don't think I've had a period since like December or January.
Wow.
And she's like, do you know why? And I was like, no, but it's been like this. So like we went, I did a transvaginal scan. I'm a doctor now.
There you go.
And like your ovaries are fine. Your uterus looks great. Like there's nothing like physically wrong. And so I was like, okay. So I go back to my doctor and she's like, it could be your weight. And I was like, okay. She's a new doctor. So I gave her some space. She's a black woman. All my doctors are women, number one, which is very specific. I was like, I don't want men telling me anything.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Please. So she and I are sitting and we're talking and she's like, well, you're heavier. And I was like, it's funny you say that because I've lost 25 pounds since last May. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay. She goes, well, tell me about like your eating habits. Like we go through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, let's just sit and do some math. So she and I sit and we're talking about like how many calories I'm burning during a workout, how many calories I'm eating. Then we talk about like your BMR, which is like your body, your body's metabolic rate or something, or like how, whatever. Not a real doctor, obviously. So she and I go and she's like, 34, you're 5'4". Sorry, you're 34, you're 5'4", and you're whatever weight you are. Yeah. She's like, even if you laid on your couch every day, you should be consuming 1,700 calories minimum.
Okay.
I was like, okay. She goes, because you're working out, you probably should be taking in about 22 to 23.
Yeah.
And then I, like, my breathing gets heavy because I'm like, oh my God. Like,
that's a lot.
That's a lot. I'm like, that's a lot.
Yes. Because that's what and that's that eating. Because I, of course, you know, with binging, it's like, it's just, you know, it's a whole thing. But then you're like, okay, to counter that, let me go on these diets. Let me work out as much as I can. Let me whatever. But then it's, so you count calories. You're counting calories, you're counting whatever. So yes. And so when somebody else hears 2,200 calories, they're like, that's probably normal. But, you know, for me and you, we're like, that's a lot of calories.
It's a lot of calories.
And it's a distorted thinking, but it is a thinking.
Mm-hmm. So she and I are talking and she goes, you probably should be doing about 22, 23. I go, okay. Mm. We sit and do the math. And she's like, take me through your day. I go, okay. So I'm like, this is what I work out. On an empty stomach, so I work out first thing in the morning, probably like 6 a.m., work out, come back, shower, I'll have whatever, like my protein shake, my supplements, maybe something.
Yeah.
And then I'll have like, I'm not hungry until noon, which is also a thing my therapist and I talked about. She goes, you now ignore your body cues. So we're trying to relearn that because as someone who's always starved herself, I now don't connect stomach and brain. So we're talking. And we go through, and my gynecologist is like, you're probably taking in around, like, 1,400 to 1,500 calories. I was like, okay. She's like, do you think you can up that? And I go, if I'm being honest, probably not. Mm. And she's like, but it might help you bring back your period. I go, but if you're telling me I am, quote, fine, except for I'm not getting a period and there's nothing physically wrong.
Yeah.
In my brain, my eating disorder brain's like, well, I'm fine. Like, I'm alive. I'm sustainable. I don't feel lightheaded. Like, all these things, I'm sitting there talking to her and then like reflecting in my car right home. I'm like, is this me actually listening or am I defending my eating disorder?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And so she's like, well, we could put you on like a low estrogen, low hormone birth control. And she's like, or you can just like see if it comes back. And the immediate thing I think is like, if I take a pill, I'll gain weight.
Yeah, I gained weight from taking birth control in high school, and immediately I was like, take me off of this. Like,
yeah,
I have probably not great, but I haven't been on it since. So because there's that fear of like, I've worked so hard to get to where I'm at. And if I take this, it's going to all come back. And then I'm just battling side effects rather than nutrition and, you know, lack of movement.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there's this girl I started following on Instagram, and I'll link her. Her name is Raquel. She's from Toronto, but she's in Toronto and LA splitting her time. And she's a nutritionist who also is in ED recovery for orthorexia, which is like the obsession with healthy food specifically. Mm. And so like, I think about that too, because like when I was talking to my gynecologist, like, well, how do you, I'm like, I eat pretty good. Like, yeah. I'm not, like, I don't believe in good or bad food, but I'm just like, yeah. I eat balanced, I eat good, I eat, you know, I'm doing protein, carbs, vegetables, all the things, like sleeping a lot, gallon of water, like the whole bang. Like, I'm trying to be as healthy as possible, but like, also like, Black women gain muscle quicker than like other races. And so I have to think about that. Like, I'm 5'4", but I'm very like muscular. So I'm also like talking to her about that. Long story short, I haven't had therapy since that session, since that appointment, but that's something one of my best friends and I were talking about, and they were like, are you going to talk to your therapist about this? I go, I am, but I am already a person who gets very obsessive to the point where like, I have a scale, but I do not allow myself to weigh myself more than once a week, if at all. Like,
okay,
one of my friends is a therapist, like, throw it away. Your scale doesn't do anything for me. Like, I hear you, but
I know. I have one too.
Yeah, I'm like, I hear you, but
it's a security. I don't know if it's a security thing or if it's just part of the disorder.
I think it's a control thing. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, every Friday I'm going to weigh myself and I'm going to see. And it's a weird adrenaline rush when you see it go down.
Yes. And so there's this, I was, obviously Instagram girls are like the things of like fitness right now, but there's this one person I was following. And she is in ED recovery as well. And she was talking about how, like, she's able to, like, lose all this weight and do all this stuff in a healthy way. And so listening to her, but she's very big about weigh-ins. And she's like, don't think of it as the enemy. Think of it as collecting data. And I'm like, that is very easy to say when you are where you are right now. And you're not in the thick of a situation that you're trying to also balance. And it's funny, like, I'm a person who, like, loves to cook. I love to go out and eat with friends. Like, it's so, like, this weird duality in my brain of, like, Glennon Doyle once said, you have this one wild life.
Love Glennon Doyle.
And you're going to, like, waste it trying to be thin. And I'm like, I wish I didn't. Like, I wish that was not in my brain. But, like, the whole reason why I started this 75 challenge back in September was because I'm in two weddings in October.
Okay.
And I was like... I know it's going to sound horrible, and I want to like create space for like vulnerability and honesty. But I was like, I don't want to look horrible in pictures.
Pictures are extremely. It's really sad when I look at my phone. I don't have pictures of myself. I have pictures unless it's my face. But I hide behind my kids in photos. I absolutely, and it's something I'm forcing myself to do more is take pictures of myself, but not then immediately go and try and see, like, I'm going to take four more and see, you know, just take one and then keep it on there. And that's it. Like, that is it. So it's interesting that you say the photos things, because I don't like looking at myself on camera. I don't like looking at myself in video, and I'm putting myself in a position with the podcast to have to do both. And I think
it challenges you.
Yeah. It sucks.
I hear you 1,000,000,000%. And I think that's also why, like, instead of like the scale, I was like body pictures, like that was how I got a lot of like my ED recovery, is taking photos versus weighing myself. And so like I think about like when I was younger, like in my early 20s, and all my friends and I were going out, like I would take pictures, but it was like, you can only take it from this angle. If I didn't like it, like I was the one like, no, you can't post that. Nope, delete it right now. Like, I was like, no, don't tag me in it. Don't, I was like, nothing. Same. Like the whole shebang.
Or I'm like, and just like, crop me out.
Please. Or like I only wore black. Like I was such an only black girl for so long. And one of my best friends is like, you have to get out of this. And I was like, one day I will add colors to my life. And it was such a and like now when I post, she's like, oh, she's like so proud. She's like, you were, when I say like obsessively only black, like and only things that were oversized, like nothing fitted, like I was like, no. Like, and it was weird too, also like thinking about this as like I was listening to this guy last night who's a fitness coach, and he was like, it is so interesting as like we start this journey of like trying to be healthier, mm-hmm. and we get more and more judgmental of our bodies because they should look a certain way. And I've always thought about this too, and this is actually what's like triggered me to start sharing more about my ED journey on social. Like, it's just been something I never really shared. It was like this imposter syndrome of like, who am I? And I'm like, no, share it.
I feel that.
But it's because like two things. I rarely see a Black woman talking about eating disorders ever. And so that, I feel like that's really isolating for people. It's like, I want to like set that sort of stage, number one. And number two, as a person who is in a curvier body, like I have boobs, I have a butt, like I am 5'4", like average, but my friends call me short. I'm the shortest of my friends.
I was that's like, hilarious. I'm like, you're 5'1".
I'm like, you guys, I am average. Like, no. I have friends like 5'10" who are girls. I'm like, just because you're Amazonian beautiful goddesses with long legs.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was like, short people for life. And that too of like, I think whenever I go to the doctor, and the doctor scale is different than my scale at home, which always annoys me. I'm like, one of these, something's not right here. Like, I'm probably like almost 6 to 10 pounds heavier whenever my doctor weighs me versus when I weigh myself at home. Like, I don't know what's happening here. Maybe because I'm fully clothed. Who knows? Like, whatever. Not important.
Do you ever do this thing when you get on your scale? And I don't know if it's just a me thing. You get on and I always subtract 2 pounds. In my head, I'm like, I'm going to subtract 2 pounds because I've got water weight. I've got like I just make an excuse for whatever number I'm seeing. I'm going to take off 2 pounds.
Well, it's funny you said I just got my hair done. And so I'm like, that has to add weight to my scale. Like it was the day I got my hair braided. And then like a couple of days later, I weighed myself like, how did I get? I was like, oh, I got my hair done. And I was like, but does it actually? It was so yes and no at the same time. I was like,
Yeah.
So all that to say, I'm just like, I never thought that this would be a 20, 30 year long relationship. Like, I'm 34 now. My ED started when I was like 12. So this has been like 30 years of me dealing with this. And it's interesting too, like I said, I've never had anyone in my family say anything bad about my body.
Right.
I have people of all types of body shapes in our family. And like, we're very much like, we don't comment on other people's bodies. Like I grew up in a very healthy family. And I just think about that too, of like my mom who passed when I was 16, when she learned about my ED, she was like, well, let's go to your doctor and talk to your doctor. Like, it was never from this place of like shame or ridicule. She's like, let's just get answers. Like, let's see what your doctor says. My doctor's like, you're a normal 12-year-old. Like, she's like, but I hear you. Like, this is where it starts. This is what happens. And so, I just want, I think for me lately, of like the imposter syndrome of like, I just, like I told you, I hadn't recorded the podcast in a while. Like, I was just so in my head about like control, perfectionism. Like, I was overwhelmed from work. And I'm just like, I need to just start like having an outlet again. And just like, this is what I want to invest it in. And so, I'm really happy that we were able to chat about that. Cause it's like just so
it's
isolating. Or it's like, and it's this, that thing too, right now, like body positivity and body neutrality and like, the whole like, you can love your body while you also want to change it. And like, I'm like, yes to all of that. And I'm like, I wish I was at body neutrality. I wish I was at body acceptance. Like, right now, my therapist and I were working last year, like just accepting my body as it is. And I was like, I'm not there yet. Like, I had a whole thing. I was like, it was homework she gave me every day of like, what are you grateful that your body can do? And I didn't realize my ED had gotten that bad last year when we were talking about it. So I like, there's definitely been steps, but I just still think like it's so isolating because people just see you as like this happy, bubbly person, like goes out and like lives a life, and then you're like, but this like very isolating, secretive thing of like, I have friends who would empathize and understand, then you're also like, but I don't want to trigger your ED, and like, I don't ever want anyone to feel bad about their body. That's never my intention. And like, I fully support all bodies, and I do believe that all bodies are beautiful. I'm just so hypercritical of mine.
Of your, I'm the same way too. And I don't know if it's when you're said, like, you know, when your friends are there, empathetic or sympathize with you, a lot of mine, you know, don't even know, because it wasn't something I wanted to share. Maybe my closest friends do, but, and even then they would know. And I would just be like, yeah, it's the thing, like, I'm working through. And then, like, quickly glance past it. But I, you know, if there's parties or if we're going to dinner, I don't know if it's an anxiety trigger that just happens from just being out and conversing, but I would, like, eat really fast. And I don't know if that's part of that binging, but I would eat really fast and then I would look around and be like, everyone's still eating. Like, why couldn't I slow down? And I don't know why. And I mean, I'm still understanding it. Or if they're at a party and there's like an open snack bar, I will try my hardest. I'm like, okay, don't go in the kitchen because you're gonna feel uncomfortable at some situation, a conversation or whatever, and you're gonna wanna go cope with food. And then it's just gonna be chip and chip and chip until the entire bowl's gone. And I'm not even hungry. And then you're like, okay, well, the other day I went to dinner with my son and I was stressed. Work was super stressful. I think I had worked like 16 hours. And I just felt really disconnected from him and wanted to go and just have like a mommy son date. And so we went to dinner and I ordered my food and ordered his food and it came out. And the waiter was in training, a new waiter, and he was pretty young, I guess-ish. I don't know. I don't think he was that young. But he left, and when he came back, my food was gone. And it wasn't in like a minute, but he came back, and I was so stressed that I had tunnel visioned and just kind of ate. And when he came back, his comment was, dang, you killed that. And immediately, I wanted to crawl inside my body. Because it was so apparent how fast I'd eaten that somebody else commented on it. And I was like, okay. So of course I made like a joke and I was like, yeah, it's been one of those days. Like I haven't eaten all day, which wasn't true. And so, but trying to cover up something, did he know? No, he had no idea. But was the comment necessary? Probably not.
Not at all.
Not at all. And so then I'm like, that was humiliating. Now, the only people that knew what had happened was me, you know? And to him, it could have been like, I'm making an observation. But that was an observation that had a huge spiraling effect later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. It's a constant battle.
Yeah. Yeah. He's saying that, like, I'm such a slow eater because I'm about control and, like, mm-hmm. restriction. Mm-hmm. That like, whenever one of my best friends, her mom and I are very close. So like, I go to her house, we watch soccer together. She's like, do you want a snack? I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, she's like, I'm ordering dinner. What do you want? I'm like, oh, I'll get whatever. Like, I'm just like very passive. Yeah. And so she and I have been having a lot of conversations too, because she is in her 70s. So like, she's very much like, and she like dealt with her weight when she was younger. And so like, she and I talk a lot about stuff and. So I've been hanging out with her a lot lately, and she's like, you look so happy. And I'm like, I am. Like, I feel better. Yeah. I feel physically better. And she's also like, you've also lost weight. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, like, since X amount of pounds since, like, last year and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about it. And so it's just been interesting because she's like, her daughter and I have been talking about, like, you're not supposed to comment on people's bodies. But I think for her, like, growing up in the time she grew up in, like, you
it was
do.
Like a compliment?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is a compliment. And I still kind of think, like, when I go home, like, I have friends who are like, oh, my God, you're so skinny. And I find it interesting because, like, one of my friends who's from the West Coast, mm-hmm. she deals with it, too. Like, she's like, it's such a coast thing of, like, yeah. you've always been taught to be thin. And so I think it's just, like, such a reactionary thing to say. And so it's interesting because, like, obviously me, I'm like, I'm trying not to lean into that of, like,
yeah.
You may think that I'm like, I want to lean into like, I look stronger, I look happier, my skin looks better, my sleep is better,
healthier.
Like,
I'm sleeping better.
Yeah,
yeah, and my joints don't hurt. Yep.
And so it was really kind. Someone on Instagram who follows me was like, I don't want to comment on your body, but I can see that you've been working really hard to be healthier. I was like, thank you. Like, that was like the perfect way to say that.
And the health is showing through. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It like sitting here talking to you, I'm like, I cannot believe it's been 30 years. Like, yeah. I think it's just like something you never think is going to affect you for so long, or like you know, yeah. And you ebb and flow, and like you have your moments when you aren't in the thick of it and you don't think about it. But lately I have been, and it's been interesting because, like, obviously with like all the medical options now for weight loss, yeah, like the shot or an oral med or what have you, and you know, a doctor that I'm no longer seeing because he and I had beef. My fault for trying to get a male doctor. I'm the problem.
Like, it's my fault. All my fault.
I knew better. He and I are going back and forth, and he had asked if I would like to try. And I was like, I've thought about it. It's not something I'm against for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, but as a person who, you know, I used to be pre-diabetic. I used to have high blood pressure. Like, that was what I was working towards when I first did the first 75. I was like, I just want to get these numbers down and get healthier. And I've done that, and I'm in a really good place. And that's something I'm really proud of. But he was like, well, what about this? Like, well, I don't think my insurance will cover it, which they don't, which is fine. Yeah. You know, life. So he prescribed another med, but he never brought me back in. He just prescribed this medication that it's a stimulant, so like it does elevate your heart rate a little bit, and I went down the rabbit hole, like it could cause anxiety, it could do all these things. And so I was like, okay, like I am open to it, but I would love to have another conversation. And then like essentially he ghosted me, so I found a new doctor, which is fine. And so I've been on this med since the beginning of April. And it's cut down food noise, which is what everything, like, you know, the other meds that they do. But it is a medication that you can stop and be okay with. And it's just like starting with healthy habits again. And like, just because you're not hearing food noise. And so like, I still get hungry, but not in a way that I used to. And so I have a friend who's been on the shop for a long time. And so she and I talk about like what she's going through and like that whole shtick. And so all that to be said is like, that's been really hard too, because it's like the pride I feel that I now only do 3 meals a day.
Okay.
And I think between that and like my doctor's comment of like, what do you want from me? Like, I don't know what else to do. Like, you're telling, first my doctor was like, you need to lose weight. And I was like, okay, great. Mm-hmm. I'm on this med. This is what it does. I've lost whatever I've lost. And you tell me I need to lose weight. And then we talk about my calories and you're like, oh, you need to eat more. And I'm like, and that drives me crazy. I'm like, I just need someone to understand that the BMI is bullshit, which we all know.
Yeah.
I go, if my numbers look good and I am in the best shape I've been in probably my entire life.
Yeah.
Then what else is it? If it's just a number on a scale, my friend is a therapist, like, she goes, you could lose 50 pounds if you chop off a leg. I go, exactly. Like, what is the goal here? Yes. And is it just in, you know, that idea of, like, you're supposed to be X amount of weight of whatever? And I'm like, but who is that for? Who is that serving? Like, if it is not detrimental to my health, then what is the point? And that doctor was not able to tell me. She's like, well, it might bring back your period. I go, but you just said I'm fine. So what is the point? And it was just, that gets me angry. And I think that also makes me spiral of, like, you're telling me to do one thing and then another. And I'm like, so I'm just going to do what I'm doing because I am alive and I feel great.
And you're like, and it's also working. Like, I'm seeing results and it's working for me. And I don't need another thing that I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And when you were talking about like your spiral in college and all that, I think about mine of like in college, like I was taking diet pills that I found online. Lord knows what was in those diet pills.
Oh, my gosh.
But I took some and I was taking them pretty regularly to the point that like one of my friends was like, you've lost like 30 pounds in a month. Like, you look sick. And I was like, yeah, but I've lost weight. Like,
but
I'm thin. And to the point where like she was so concerned. We weren't roommates, but we hung out a lot. And so she had the spare key to my room. I was an RA, not long story. and so she went in and she flushed the pills. Like, she was just that concerned. And so we sat the whole weekend, and when I tell you I went through withdrawals
from
whatever was in that med, like shaking, sweating, throwing up, headache, and I was 19, maybe 20, and I was like, at what cost?
Yeah.
At what cost and for who?
Yeah.
And I think about that often too. Is like, I, whenever things back, I'm like, at least I'm not there. Like, I have gotten here. And I, yes. And I'm very proud of that, of like, I don't need to lose that much weight in that amount of time. Like, that's never the goal. I want something sustainable. I want to like live long and be healthy and all the things. Like, that's the whole reason why I think I do all this.
Yes.
So yeah, I just think about that too, of like the journey of an eating disorder also for that you have for so long is just such an interesting thing too, that I also think people don't understand. So just like, well, you look like this. And so also that, like, when I tell people like, oh, I have an eating disorder, like, but do you? I'm like,
yes. You're like, yes, I do. But not all eating. Because as soon as somebody says eating disorder, they just think that somebody is
anorexic.
Yes. And then it's like, no, that's not the only one. There's actually quite a few. And it looks and manifests in different ways. I definitely feel like, and I don't know if you feel the same, that it has impacted relationships for myself, in the sense of, you know, just feeling confident enough in my body to be in relationships with confidence that, I mean, again, because I think we're always, as women, in with so much access to social media, which is why I don't let my 14-year-old daughter have social media.
Smart.
Because I'm like, I'm struggling with it as an adult, and I compare myself.
So impressionable at 14.
Oh, yeah. So I compare, you know, I still compare. It's a lot easier as an adult, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're a little bit more like, we have that thing in the back of our head that's like, nothing's ever real on Instagram. Nothing's mm-hmm. ever real on the internet. How much filters? How many edits? Mm-hmm. I do graphic design in Photoshop, and I can make somebody look totally different mm-hmm. with a wave of an AI wand. So it's just crazy, because I'm like, calm down. Like, yeah, it's a beautiful photo, but is it real? Mm-hmm. So, but for a 14-year-old, you know, that's like,
this must be real. It's online. Like, yes. It's a completely different shift. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so I know that for me in previous relationships that I've had, it's a lot of even comparing myself to my partner. Like, my, you know,
yes,
where, you know, he could work out and lose weight within like a week. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I've been doing this for 3 weeks and
nothing.
I feel like I gained 2 pounds.
Yep.
And I mean, he, you know, my ex, which is the father of my children, we're still very good friends, have a great relationship. I consider him a best friend. You know, he would always be like, your body is, you know, different than my body. And, you know, women's bodies are, you know, different and it's okay and blah, blah, blah. But it didn't matter, because I would be like, no, it's not. But then you have that, you know, you already have so much insecurity. You have so much, it's kind of like a self-loathing of not being able to get to where you want and look how you want to look. Then you disconnect and you pull away from being affectionate, being, you know, because I definitely was like, don't touch my body. Like, don't touch my stomach. And extremely after having kids, it became a whole different thing.
Yeah, I had a partner who, when we were dating, my ED wasn't like a peak position, but it was like enough that he noticed. Like, he lived in a different town at the time, so he would like come in on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And like, 1 week he was just like, you've lost weight. I'm like, you saw me like 2 weeks ago. Yeah. And I was like, okay, like, that was like a trigger for me.
Yeah,
that he had noticed so deeply. He was like very kind, like checked in, like, he knew. So like, we had been friends, like, he was checking in, which was really kind. It's really interesting, and I think it is also like not being from Texas.
Yeah.
Of like, one, I have never had any issue finding a partner, like, back on the East Coast, like in the Northeast, like, finding a partner, dating, hooking up, like, we're grown-ups here, hooking up, what have you. have never had an issue in both like cis hetero men in the Northeast and then like queer people here. But it is interesting, like, as a Black curvy woman in Austin, I find it's the hardest city I've ever dated in. because I feel like Austin's very thin and mm-hmm. white and what have you. And I'm just mm-hmm. like, and then I also think like it's obviously like being a Black woman and all that other shit that comes with dating yeah. and the hardships there. But yeah, no, like whenever I'm home in the Northeast, I'm fine. Like I can get yeah. a date in like 20 minutes if I go outside. Here, I'm like, my friend's like, oh, why aren't you dating? I'm like, 'cause Austin's literally a joke to date in. Like you're it like, is there's... a cluster. Like
it is horrible. I tried the apps, you know, get out of a marriage and then you do the immediate or any relationship, not just mm-hmm. marriage, and you're like, I want to meet somebody. I just want to know that I feel wanted or whatever. Mm-hmm. Went on 2 dates that I met through a dating app. Horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible. The first one, I was like, he was nice enough, but he was there because he had just gotten out of a horrible relationship. But instead of wanting to talk to me, he wanted to talk about her and why it was so bad. So then I gave, you know, free counseling for an hour and a half. And he was like, well, I had such a great time. I'm like, yeah, well, you owe me like
because you've got $250. Yeah.
And then the second one was trying to pull conversation mm-hmm. out. And I've always been told I talk too much. But I'm like, do I talk too much or do I just talk about things that I'm passionate about? Do I talk about things that mm-hmm. I want to get to know you? I want to know your story. I want to know, you know, like I want to connect. And it was ask a question. He'd respond very politely, but then it was like silent. So it was like, ugh. Do you have any brothers and sisters? And he'd be like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Cricket, cricket, cricket. Okay, well, I've got brothers too. Like,
there was just no back and forth. Yeah.
So then I finally was like, I'm not doing these apps. I'm not going to do it because if I'm going to meet somebody, I'm going to meet them because it's going to be a natural way. Nothing mm-hmm. wrong with dating apps. I've had friends that have huge success with them. But at least right now, I'm like, this is not where I'm going.
Yeah. And I always find it funny. Like I have one good dating app experience. We didn't date, but we became really close friends. Like my friend Nicole and I like went on a date and just like we liked each other, but we didn't like follow up and we just like became friends. I was like, this is fine. Everybody else I've ever dated, I've met out in the wild, like was friends first or met through friends or through like other things I was doing. So I'm like, oh, I'm fine. Like, I'm also not a person who's ever forced anything in my life. And I feel like relationships should be the same. Like, I'm 34. Like, I've gone this far. Like, I'm not about to settle just to be with someone. And, you know, I've had friends who are like, I wish I could be more like you. Like, I don't know who I am if I'm not in a relationship. And I'm like, I can't relate because I've always been on my own. Like, I'm an only child. I come from a big family, but I'm an only child.
Okay.
And so, like, I'm a solo processor. Like, I've gotten really self-sufficient and independent. And also, like, I've gone to therapy. Like, I've done the work. Yeah. And then I talk to my friends, my dude friends specifically, who are like, you're great. Men aren't where you are right now. Like, you're not like a person men just date. Like, you are like marriage material, and a lot of men aren't ready for that. I'm like, that's sad. Like, I just like,
you're like, okay.
I have to suffer because you're an idiot. Or like, I have guy friends who are like, I'm like, do you have any friends? They go, yeah, but no one I want to set you up with. I'm like,
oh, then
get better
too.
Friends. Like, why are you friends? Like, well, not because of that. I'm like, fine, but it makes me so angry every time they say, I'm like, no, I don't know any good guys. Then why the hell are you friends with these people?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my soapbox on that shit. I'm like, what sense
you're like,
does that then make?
Why would you hang around them? Because they have the good tools when we work on the cars, or they are fun to be around. And that's, you know.
Yeah.
Totally.
They're not my friend because I want to date them. Okay, bye. That's not what I'm asking.
Yeah.
I'm asking, are they actually good people?
Yeah. Are they a good person?
Also, have you ever looked, like, big sidebar, male relationships fascinate me. I'm like, are y'all even friends? You don't talk to each other.
Oh, my gosh. I know.
So you do, like, once a year. Like, what do
I would, or, like, their friendship is through memes.
Yeah.
Like, they just send each other memes all day. And or I'm like, hey, how was you know, in previous relationships, I'd be like, how was your friend? Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Okay, well, didn't he just have this go on? Yeah. Well, did you talk to him about it? No, it's none of my business. Like, if he wants to tell me, then he'll tell me. What in the world? If my friend is going through something, I'm like, I do a follow-up. Hey, last week we chatted. I just want to check in. How are you doing? Are you okay? Blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it is extremely fascinating.
Fascinating. Like, I think I have two guy friends who I'm friends with both of them, and I met them. I met one through the other, and I'm like, so I'll talk to them both. I'm like, oh, like XYZ has this going on, and XYZ has this going on. I go, I haven't talked to him in months. I'm like, Did you just not conversate? Or like my girlfriends here, they have boyfriends or husbands, so we've like they like their boyfriends and husbands have become friends.
Yeah,
it's like we'll hang out and like the boys will hang out, and then like the girls and I, like, we talk all day every day, and then one of the boys like, oh, I should call, blah blah blah. I haven't seen him in like a month. I haven't talked to him in 2 months. We talk every, we talk, I just, it's so fascinating to me always. I'm like, oh my God, men are interesting. So they interesting.
Are. They're interesting, and they are something that, I mean, dating is scary right now. I think dating in your 30s in Austin is exhausting in general.
It's one of the main reasons why I'm like, I'll probably move again in a year. Like,
really? Okay.
It was one of the big reasons I moved. I moved away for 6 months. I moved back home to Connecticut. Okay. October of 22 to May of 23, I moved home for 6 months. One, because I thought it would be forever. Like, I was just over, I still kind of am over Austin. I don't regret moving back. I'm really happy I did. Like, work at a job I really love. It really helped my career professionally. I met some new friends in this last year. No regrets.
Yeah.
I moved home to Connecticut just to be closer to my family. I am also, like, politically, I do not align with the state of Texas. And so it was just like all the, especially with abortion reform right now and like queer stuff. I'm just like, I don't need to be here. I grew up in Connecticut, one of the most liberal states in the country. What am I doing?
Oh, for sure.
And also, like, dating is a nightmare in Austin. And it's so funny because all my friends are like, you're great. I'm like, you guys, I know. This isn't a me thing. This isn't about me. Yeah. This is the demographic I'm in, I think. Like, it's just like, I am so unapologetically myself too. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never been a person who looks for outward validation, like outside validation, because therapy, I've been in therapy since I was 15. Like, I've done a lot of work of like knowing my triggers, knowing my stuff, like what I am and not looking for. And like, I've never been a person to settle. And so I also think about like the idea too that like a lot of men, I won't say men in general, but a lot of men expect women to settle or like take the bare minimum. Like, no, like, you can go. Like, I'm fine alone. Like, I would rather be alone and happy than with someone and miserable. And I don't think men specifically understand that. I'm like, I don't need you to fix anything. I have a very great life. Like, I have great friends. I love my job. My family's great. Like, you are here. I'm inviting you in because I want you to be here. I want you to be a part
of all the great things that are in my life. I want you to also be something else that is great.
Yes. And like, My cousin and I are really close, and he's like, you don't need a savior. He goes, you need a cheerleader and a challenger. He goes, you need someone who's going to be those two things for you. Like, we'll be in your corner, we'll love you and support you, but also we'll, like, call you out on your bullshit. And, like, I'm like, yes. Like, I don't need to be fixed. And I think a lot of people think relationships fix things. And I'm like, no.
Oh, I definitely,
like,
was one of those people.
The 50-50, I'm like, no, the Obama said 100 and 100. So even when one of you falls short, you still have that other 100, so.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
You said something earlier and I was like, oh, yeah, where you were like, I've never been one to force something. I definitely was one to force relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, I was very, if I like somebody, I was like, I'm going to let it be known. I'm going to be aggressive about it. I'm going to be persistent about it. I'm going to, you know, and some of the times it'd work and some of the times it wouldn't, but the times it worked great for a little bit, but then it was a lot of me putting in a ton of like, hey, I want to be with you and I'm going to show you why I'm so great. But it was almost like continuing to sell them why I was great. So instead of just letting us both be equally interested in it, it was like, I'm gonna be in this relationship, I've pursued you, I'm gonna keep pursuing you, but almost as like a, trying to convince you why our relationship is good. So it definitely is.
I just
another part of therapy.
I just want people to know, like, I've been like mantraing this to myself too, because dating apps have been really like, they fuck with my head so badly. Oh, like, if I don't get a match, I'm like, I'm great.
Or
like,
they don't respond. I hate when it's like, you got 24 hours to respond. So I'll say, hey. And then everybody's done this. When starting dating apps, what are some things that you say? Like, do you just say, hey, or do you say, like, and you'll see guys be like, I don't want a girl that's just going to say hi. Like, ask me an interesting question. I don't know you. I don't know you. I'm saying hi so that we can start talking. What is an interesting question? That's great. Let me ask you, what is an interesting question? What is something you want me to ask you?
Right. Yeah, I typically start with like, hey, how's your week going? Or hey, any big plans this weekend? Or like, right. Hey, like just to like start the conversation.
Yeah.
Someone was like, how was your week last week? And I was like, actually, it was a bit of a nightmare. I'm really happy it's the weekend. How about you? Like, you ask. Like, I'm not. I think it's also that, too. Like, I feel like a lot of time they just want us to be, like, happy-go-lucky or, like, the cool girl. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm 34. I am cool. I'm fine. Like,
yeah.
Please. Please be serious. I'm just like. Or, like, there's this. I don't know if you've seen this guy. His friends made him a TikTok to find him a girlfriend. His name is Matt. And they've made him, this is like free advertising for him. I hope he finds what he's looking for. They've made him like a Hinge,
okay,
maybe a Bumble, and a TikTok. This whole TikTok is dedicated to just like highlighting him, which I feel like is very sweet. I've yelled to my friends like, why didn't you do this for me? They go, Brie, be serious. I go, you're right, I'm fine. Anyway, he's probably 32, 33.
Okay.
And his age range is 26 to 31. I'm like, this is oddly specific. Why?
Yeah.
Because then I start spinning. I'm like, me as a person who's like ridiculously into like true crime shit. Like I'm talking cults. I'm talking grooming. Yeah. I'm talking like love bombing. I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
So the minute I see someone who's like 7 to 8 years younger to like mm-hmm. 2 years younger, I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah.
No.
Why?
Because mine, like on? The youngest I think I would date is 30. That's pushing it because I'm 34. Yeah.
I'm 33. Pushing. And I think the youngest I would go is 30, maybe 31.
Yeah, I was like, that's pushing. I'm typically like 2 years younger to like 8 years older window.
Yeah.
I dated someone was 11 years.
40, 41.
11, I dated someone was 11 years older than me, and it was I was 27 at the time. I was like, this is interesting.
Yeah, this is different.
Now looking back, I'm like, why? What did you find interesting in a 27-year-old when you were 38? Like,
yeah.
That's neither here nor there. That's
right.
I've unpacked her in therapy. But yeah, no, so I'm always like, it's so funny. And like, my friend's mom was on The Golden Bachelor. And so we've been talking about dating as she's gotten older too. Like, everyone wants, like, dudes tend to want someone who's like significantly younger. And I'm like, so I'm supposed to be dating like 40 or 50 years old? Cool. Tight. No, it's fine. I'm like, as a person who's not sure if she wants kids, I think I'm okay with someone who's older.
Yeah.
But also, like, I never truly know. Like, I don't think I'll know till I know.
Yeah.
I've been really enjoying the aunt life right now and getting like 10 hours of sleep a night. So right now I've been like, this is fine.
Enjoy it.
Thank you.
Because my 5-year-old crawls into bed with me every night at like 3 a.m. And I love it. But there are times where I'm like, and you peed in my bed.
Oh, no. I'm like, you're so sweet.
Okay.
Yeah, whenever I go home and my cousin she has 4 boys, I'm always like, I live in a very quiet, clean,
a very different life.
And no one touches any of my stuff and no one's screaming and there's nothing on the walls. I'm like, okay.
My 14-year-old and I definitely will argue over clothes. She wears all my, I've got sweatshirts.
She has 2 closets, yours and
hers. Yeah, for sure. Or my stuff will go missing and I'm like, are you taking my stuff?
She's like, I thought you loved me. What are you talking about?
I know. It's like Gilmore Girls.
We've tangented. We've
I know. We kind of, we were like, forgot we were doing a podcast.
I'm just going to make a note. Like, I'm so sorry. Jess and I tangented it. And so if it just seems like a quick jump, it's because it was. So I know that you have a book coming out in August, potentially. And I just want to make sure we touch on that, too, before we go.
Yes. So I've written. I love writing. That's the ultimate goal is to be an author. I have written novels, I've written children books, I've written whole things, and then thrown them away. Because it just...
Jessica.
I know. It's a thing. But I'm always writing. I've written a script for a TV show that I've pitched to a one network. Didn't get picked up, which is totally fine, you know. But I've also submitted it for some competitions. I'm still pursuing that. It's one of the many projects I'm in. But one of the other projects I created during COVID was writing a children's book. And it's called Room 406, which is my old classroom number. And it's a book for teachers and students for the first day of school. And so it's about just the nerves that can happen. It's of both sides, a first year teacher or just a teacher in general who's taught for a while. There's always going to be that first day jitter for them. And then a student's, the first day of school is so exciting. But there's also a lot of fear and uncertainty and everything that comes along with it from both sides. And so the story just kind of follows that storyline. And it's a really cute, sweet kind of twist of an ending. And I'm doing the illustrations for it. That's why it's taking me forever, because I'm a writer, not an artist. But yeah, so hopefully it'll be in my hands, ready to sell, ready to go come this August. That's the goal. But it is going to depend on how fast I can. You talk about being a perfectionist. When it comes to art, I'm like, I don't know how to draw this thing. So I'm going to take an hour to figure it out.
I give you so much credit, because if I'm not good at something, I just don't do it. Which is why I haven't done the podcast, which is why I rarely post on Instagram anymore. I'm like, I just get so in my head and spiral. So I give you so much credit, because I'm the same. I could write for days if you let me. Drawing? Oh, yeah. Absolutely not. No.
I have a book behind me and it says how to draw cute things. And it's a step by step. And I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to teach myself how to draw this character that's in my head. And, you know, the publisher was like, you know, you can get an art. You can hire an artist. And I'm like, I don't want to spend the money on that. I just want to do it myself. And literally that's part of the control.
Literally me running my podcast. Someone's like, I'll edit for you. I'm like, thank you. But
yeah.
I had friends I'll edit. And she did. And I would still go back and listen and re-edit. I'm like, this is so kind of you. But I know I'm just going to waste time for both of us, because I could just do it myself for free and do it the way I want to do it. Anyway, but I'm like, if there's any illustrators out there who maybe want to help Jessica out, I'll make sure I link all the
for
things.
For sure. Maybe throw me a promo. What is it called? A pro bono?
A little pro bono. Yeah. Listen, first time project.
Yeah. Just think to about have it. Just to have your art in a book, because it's taking me forever. They're like, hey, where's the cover? I'm like, it's in my
head. Yeah. It lives in my brain. I just got to get it out. It's coming.
I'm like, it's
on its way.
100% minus 90% finished.
100% finished in my head.
Yes.
About 10% on paper. So yeah.
It's been definitely on it. And it's interesting too, because this was one that I wrote and I was like, it's a cute story. And so I just started querying it out to different publishers, and it was, you know, rejection, which comes with the, you know, nature of the beast. And then when someone was like, hey, I kind of like this, can we read some more? Let's see. I was like, this is not the one that I thought was going to get picked up first, because I'm currently writing a fantasy novel. Love fantasy. So Harry Potter was my bread.
That's our third podcast episode.
Oh, I will. Listen, do you see my books? They're at the top shelf.
I'm like, we cut this out, but Jessica and I tangented about One Tree Hill, Gilmore Girls, Sophia Bush, Zendaya. I had to cut it out, but I just need you to know Jessica's coming back so we can tangent properly.
We're just going to talk. Can I ask you what your house is? Are you sorted?
Gryffindor. I'm a Griff.
Okay. See, I'm Ravenclaw. I'm Ravenclaw.
I'm a girl all day.
Fun fact, I was a part of the Harry Potter club in Texas State College, and they had a Quidditch. They had a Quidditch team that went to state. I wasn't on there, but I was the one cheering on the side.
Iconic.
And it was so much fun.
One Tree Hill is the show I've watched the most. Harry Potter is the series I've read the most. I reread it every couple of years. And if you haven't listened, another podcast plug. If you haven't listened to Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, which takes every chapter through a realm of religious view, but not in a gross way.
Cool.
And then Binge Mode Harry Potter. There's a whole show called Binge Mode, and they do Marvel, Star Wars, Game of Thrones, but they do Harry Potter, and they do each book. They do chapters, and then they do the movies. It's really good. And that's if I'm making dinner, I need something in the background, it's either that or a random true crime podcast I've already listened to. Anyway, but yeah, highly recommend. I am who I am. But Harry Potter, I'm rereading it right now. I'm on book two already.
I've read the fourth one, I want to say 14 times.
Half-Blood Prince.
That was yours?
Book. I'm obsessed. Because I never saw it coming. I was like, there's... There's no way. Speechless.
Yeah.
Speechless.
I would go to the premieres when the new books would drop. I would be there at midnight at Barnes & Noble.
What a time to be alive.
I know. And I feel sad that my daughter doesn't get to grow up in that kind of area where it's like, you go to the midnight movie releases, you go to the midnight drops for, I mean, I would go with books. My ex when video games would launch, you know? And it was just so much fun standing out there waiting. Everybody's dressed up in their robes.
This might be another episode of like the nostalgia of like the early to mid 2000s of like going to the mall for like people would come like for signings too. Like, I think about that a lot. Like, my friend and I made her parents drive us to Massachusetts, which is like a 3-hour road trip.
Oh my gosh.
Because two people from Degrassi were going to be there. We were like, we have to go. We don't know who's going to be. 100%. We have to go. And we did.
Was it Drake?
We
went.
No, it was not Aubrey Drake Graham. It was Marcos, who I also was in love with.
Okay.
And then either Paige or Hazel, I can't remember. But it was also, it was great. It was great. Yeah. It was fine. It was a great memory we have. But I was like, no, we literally made her parents drive us to Massachusetts. So.
That is crazy.
But I think it's that too, like the nostalgia of like, what a time to be alive. Book drops, CD drops, like when you had to like actually go. Or like, it was funny. This was on the recent episode of Drama Queens with the girls from Montreal. They're like, what's something you miss? And they go, when you actually like had to go get CDs and you would just listen to it straight through.
Yep.
And like, you couldn't skip it. Like, it was like a time, like in your car, you would just listen to the CD.
Yep.
And just enjoy. I'm like, what a time.
Did you ever I would have a folder, like a binder that I would print lyrics.
I still
lyrics.
Have. Oh, no, not the lyrics. I still have a CD binder in my car.
Oh, I have that too. But like to learn the lyrics of a song, if they weren't included in the little
in the packet?
Foldable.
Oh, yeah.
I'd print them, you know, go print them.
AZ lyrics, baby.
Yeah. Put them in there, learn them. And then, oh my gosh, because now, you know, it's easy. Now, it's everywhere.
It's in your Spotify. Like if you just look in Spotify, the kids today will never know the struggle of like having to make a mix CD.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have playlists. Or Pandora, you didn't have playlists on Pandora at the time. The kids don't know. They have it freaking made now. I'm like,
oh, yeah. Easy.
Back in the day, it was a struggle. Or if your CD had a scratch in it, it would just skip. Ugh, ruin the whole vibe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Or like if you wanted a cool, voicemail, you would play your favorite song, record it.
The kids today, they'll never know the
we
nostalgia.
We need to get creative and be cool.
We were millennials, we were on that, baby. We did it.
I love being a millennial.
Okay, so we'll have
what's the next it's Gen Z underneath us and then Gen Alpha.
Gen Z, yeah.
Is it Alpha or Beta?
I don't know.
I was trying to figure out what my son and daughter are. And I was like, you're not Gen Z.
I think it's Beta.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think you're
Gen Z,
I think it is Beta.
Gen Z, I give them go forth and prosper, children. Y'all are doing shit that I am just too tired to do now.
Yeah.
Also, I'm like, y'all are so much smarter. Like, they just don't take anything. Like, I love that they're so much, like, more healed than us. Like, we're not accepting that the government does X, Y, and Z. I'm like,
yeah.
Like, these, like, encampments and protests they're doing for Palestine.
Oh,
iconic.
Yeah.
Iconic. I'm like, ugh. Now that it's their job, but the kids are going to save us because they are just like, no. I know it was like,
big thing that's trending right now is Ryan Garcia's fight. If he wins, all the money he wins is going to support the kids in Palestine. I was like, that's pretty cool.
The kids are doing the right things.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. Gentle parenting. Maybe it does work.
Maybe
there's something to that.
Maybe.
Well, we'll have you back because we have to talk about
we definitely
all the things.
Will.
When I tell you, we had to probably cut like 20 minutes because we tangented about it. Important, okay? It was important TV history about. We're going to talk about it. We're not going to spoil it right now.
Yes.
I'll be sure to link everything in the show notes so everyone can find you and follow along on everything you have going on. But before we go, I always like to ask a final question. You get to pick which one. And that question is, what is the best advice you were ever given, or what's a piece of advice you would give to your younger self?
Oh, wow. Okay, I think my goodness. Can I say, okay, so it wasn't given to me, but it was a quote that I heard. And it was
There's no rules.
Okay, so this advice, it was a quote. It was from Tom Hanks.
Hi.
I think.
I love him.
But
Forrest Gump's one of my favorite movies.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Yes. I was like, wait, was he the one that said it? Yes, he did. And he was being interviewed along with a few other people. And he said, and he was asked, what is your favorite quote? And I heard it when he said it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this, I love this. And it was, this too shall pass. Just meaning like moments of struggle, hardship, you know, you're down on your luck, you want to quit, it will pass. This too shall pass. As well as moments of triumph and success and just, you know, bliss in a sense, everything that you've worked for. You will have good moments that will last, but then they'll pass, and then you'll have bad moments, which will last momentarily when I say last, and then it will pass because it is a cycle. And so I think that when I heard that, it really resonated because I think so much we try and we're constantly, I think just as humans, trying to chase that feeling, just trying to chase the endorphins, just trying to make our lives, you know, pain-free. But the reality is that's not reality. You have to have the good with the bad. So the good may come, but then it's going to pass and bad will come again. So I think telling myself back then, like, this too shall pass, might allow me to just live in the moment a little bit more than always trying to chase the next thing.
That's it for this week's episode of The Tea with Bree. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at The Tea with Bree. Send me an email at theteawithbree@gmail.com or visit the website, theteawithbreepodcast.com. You can find me, your host, Brianna Jenkins, on Instagram at Brianna Jenkins. Don't forget to rate, review, and follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. A special thanks to Mama Duke for our theme music, and I will catch you next time. Bye.